Land Podcast with David Amoyama.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining me for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. And today we're going to do a slightly different episode. It's not that Alex is suspended after Chelsea got spanked by Man City, but tomorrow I'm going to be traveling for work. So I decided to do a special episode with two interviews. And the first one is with our dear friend, Chloe Beresford. We're going to be focusing on Fiorentina, and we're going to close it out on Juve with our great friend, Adam Digby. But before we get to Juve, I want to catch up with Chloe on Fiorentina. We've had her on multiple times. Chloe is a great freelance writer for Serie A. You can find her on Football Index UK, Flow FC, Euro Fantasy Game, and she's also one of the hosts of a new podcast that I really enjoyed, the Serie A Show, with two other veterans from our podcast, John Solano and Nima Tavalli. And before we get to all that, I just want to welcome you back to Calcioland. Chloe, always a pleasure to have you on.
It's always a pleasure to come and speak. It's great to be here. Thanks, David.
So let's start a big picture, and then we're going to zero in on a couple of topics on Fiorentina. So it's been a little while since I've had you, so I want to start off very simply by asking you, if you had to give a grade to Fiorentina so far, what grade would you give them?
I think with the variable results that Fiorentina have had, I think I would have to say 5 out of 10. There's been some very good things, but there's also been some bad things. I think, you know, Fiorentina fans would definitely have liked to see them a bit higher in the table than 10th. They've had 11 draws from 23 matches, which, you know, if they could have turned some of those draws into wins, we would be looking at a much closer fight for the European places. But having said that, they're doing really well in the Coppa Italia. They're in the semi-finals. And with Juventus out of the picture now in the Coppa Italia, it's definitely something that's achievable. And maybe they can find a European place that way. You know, it would mean so much, I know, for Fiorentina fans and the city of Florence. If they could lift that trophy this season, it would just be absolutely wonderful. So 5 out of 10, but let's see where it goes from here, really.
Very well said on the Coppa Italia. There is a chance there. And of course, you had that amazing triumph against Roma, a match that will be remembered for
absolutely
a long time. But let me ask you about one of the many draws that Fiorentina had. But I have to say, probably a very positive result, all things considered. So what was your main takeaway from what we saw from Fiorentina against Napoli? We're recording this on Sunday. The game was on Saturday. What was your main takeaways from that one?
Like you say, a lot of the draws were disappointing. But against Napoli, although we beat them 3-0 at home last year, that was kind of a bit of an anomaly, shall we say. And actually, a 0-0 draw was a really good result. Fiorentina had a lot of injury problems. They had a real makeshift back line. And players had to come in that weren't sort of used to playing in certain positions. So they battled hard. They worked well as a team. You know, I keep saying this, but they are very young. And Napoli are a real quality side, and they held their own. And I actually felt, at the end of the match, I felt really, really proud of how they approached the match, that Pioli was smart in his tactics, the way he altered things to counter Napoli's strength. And, you know, it would have been nice to win, but it really was a very positive 0-0 and an enjoyable match, I think, even for the neutrals to watch.
Oh, absolutely. It was definitely very enjoyable. It's one of those very deceiving 0-0 score lines. If you're someone who says, oh, Serie A is boring, you look at the score line. But if you actually watch the game, it was far from it. So let me ask you about one of the players that was absent in the match and someone who has been linked to a lot of top clubs because he's a very impressive player. So Tell our listeners a little bit more about Milenkovic, the defender that's played dual roles for Fiorentina this season. How would you rate the season for him so far, and how would you describe him to someone who isn't that familiar with him?
He's been excellent. I mean, just to take a little step back, obviously last year he was brought in as a real unknown player by sporting director Pantaleo Corvino, and he was never really intended to play in the first team last season. But obviously with the death of Davide Astori, things had to be reevaluated. As it was in March, there was no chance to sign anybody else. So he came in and he looked really young, and he looked obviously he was displaying signs of grief, as they all were. But all of a sudden he seemed to click. He was called up to Serbia in the World Cup, and he's just gone from strength to strength. His maturity is, I think, one of the most amazing things about him for his age. He puts in assured performances, he's good in the air, he's positionally aware, he can play dual roles, he can play at right back or at centre back, as you mentioned. I do think, obviously, he's been linked a lot in the transfer market with other clubs, and I do think that Fiorentina will struggle to hold on to him. But if they do end up having to sell him, they only paid €5 million, I think, for him. So they'll get a good return for their money, and hopefully they can use that to strengthen defence in other ways. But, that doesn't mean I want to see him go. I definitely want to see him continue. But, you've got to be realistic in these sorts of situations where the player has got such an obvious talent.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, on the bright side for Fiorentina with Corvino as the sporting director, he's really a master at discovering the next one. He's already, made some good moves that'll pan off in the summer with players coming. So I'm with you there. Yeah. Definitely a player to watch. They'll make a huge profit on him if he goes this summer, which I agree with you. It's pretty likely. So let's, I don't want to ask you any more in a transfer related. I just want to celebrate some players on Fiorentina. Not that we don't want to celebrate Milenkovic, but I don't even want to get into any potential transfers. So Federico Chiesa got off to a great start to the season, slowed down a little bit, and he's been absolutely brilliant with the new year. So I sent you this ahead of time because I wanted you to think a little bit about it and to kind of frame for our listeners how good he's been. In your opinion, who was the last Fiorentina player that you would say has been better than this current version of Federico Chiesa?
Yeah, it was a hard one, that, and I did have a good think about it. And just casting my mind back a little bit, I think I'd have to say when Mohamed Salah arrived from Chelsea. Obviously, we all know who he is now, but back then, I think it was February 2015, and he'd not really done anything at Chelsea. They were quite happy to let him come to Fiorentina on loan, and his impact on the side was like an explosion. Like, nobody expected his pace, his skills. He ran riot against Juventus in a Coppa Italia match, in a semi-final actually. And he unfortunately, he didn't end up staying for a long time, but in the few months that he was with us, he was just a sensation. And I think that's probably the last time we had anybody that was on Chiesa's sort of level, really. I mean, Chiesa's been quite, like you say, up and down, and let's not forget he's only 21 still, and he still has a lot to learn. So, but yeah, I think I'd have to say Mohamed Salah, really.
Great answer. I was thinking too today, because I know some people are saying, oh, Salah's proving now that he wasn't a one season wonder, and I'm like, wait a second, he already wasn't a one season wonder before this campaign started. I mean, his half season at Fiorentina, absolutely brilliant. I would say maybe even slightly better than what we saw at Roma, so very, very good choice. So speaking of making an impact in the January window with pace and ability, one of my favorite players came back to Serie A and to Fiorentina because of his relationship with Corvino. So tell our listeners a little bit, what kind of impact has Luis Muriel made on the team since he arrived?
Oh, he's been absolutely incredible. I was so excited when I heard the news that we were going to be signing him in January, because obviously I've seen him play at Sampdoria and he was excellent then. And I think, you know, for Fiorentina, having such a young forward line with Chiesa and Giovanni Simeone, that it was starting, the pressure of being responsible for scoring the goals seemed to weigh heavy on them, and they were like sort of running through quicksand. It was really difficult for them. Chiesa was sort of taking it all on himself to try and get the goals, and that was having a negative impact on his play. And then Muriel came along, and all of a sudden it just seemed to open things up. You know, Fiorentina had really struggled for goals, and then all of a sudden they've got this free-flowing attack. Muriel's scoring, but he's also allowing Chiesa to play well, and you know, firing in goals for fun since then, obviously with the exception of Napoli on Saturday. But you know, he was exactly the right player at exactly the right time, and I think, you know, that was just yet another excellent acquisition from Corvino.
Very well said. I'm a big fan, and I'm very happy it's worked out for him. So I want to ask you about another player that I was absolutely brilliant in the match against Napoli. Gets a lot of hype because of FIFA, and he does make some outstanding saves. So the new goalkeeper, Lafont, I think anyone, you know, great shot stopper. But, you know, there's maybe a little bit more to the position. So tell me a little bit what's been your impression of Lafont so far since he arrived at Fiorentina.
Well, you know, obviously he is a great talent, and, you know, he certainly for the future, he's an absolutely fantastic signing for Fiorentina to get in before other clubs did, because he was so highly regarded. But he does make mistakes. He has cost us a couple of times. I think the ideal scenario would have been to have an experienced goalkeeper as a backup, so we could rotate him in and out of the side. But I think because his reputation was so great, that in order for a club like Fiorentina to be able to sign him, they had to probably guarantee him first team football. So he's having to do his learning in front of a big audience, and you know, his mistakes are there for everybody to see. But his talent is that I think he's worth sticking with. He could really, really pay off in the future. And if that means he's got a bit of a transition season, a learning curve, where you have these sort of heart-stopping moments where you think, what's he going to do? Then it's worth it, because, you know, he clearly is going to be an excellent goalkeeper.
Yeah, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Mattia Perin. Fantastic shot stopper. Other things about his game, not so great. And I think Lafont is very, very intriguing and all. But I think sometimes people that don't maybe follow the team as closely as you part of it. So I'm glad you gave us that perspective. So we talked about Milenkovic, talked about Chiesa, Muriel, Lafont. Those are the ones that I think most casual fans of Serie A know about, but what other players on Fiorentina this season have stood out to you?
I think Cristiano Baraghi, you know, he does a fairly quiet job at left back, but he's excellent, and he's excellent at getting forward, and he's good on the defensive side. He's had a couple of call-ups to the Italian national team, and you know, I've heard some people say, oh, you know, he's not really good enough. But actually, if you watch him regularly, you can see that he does contribute an awful lot, and he's mature in his outlook, and he can score from free kicks as well. His crossing, you know, like I said, is excellent. And I think the Fiorentina defence in general has got a bit of a bad reputation. Recently, we have been conceding a lot of goals, but when they have the regular back four of Milenkovic, Petzela, Vitor Hugo and Baraghi all together, they are actually very solid. It's just that we don't really have the strength in depth if one of those is injured or suspended, and then they can look a little bit shaky. And obviously, there's the issue with Lafont as well. To me, the midfield is the main issue. The midfield is not quite right, and sometimes that doesn't help the defence. It leaves them exposed. So, again, looking in a little bit more depth, I think, you know, the defenders have really done well this season, the regular four defenders. And it's just something that Pioli seems to be struggling with and getting the balance right in the midfield. But I think I would urge people to have a look at Cristiano Buragi and just really watch him, and they might sort of change their opinion of him, really. I think he is good enough for Italy, and I think, you know, he deserves the call-ups that he's had.
Yeah, too, and I'd say left back is probably one of the scarcest positions, and not just in Serie A, across the board, and he's definitely been a standout. And speaking of things that stand out, I'm very glad to see you've started a podcast with John Solano, who's been on Calcioland so many times, he could literally be a co-host with us. Nima Tavali, who we just had on with Inter, you've been on at least three or four times with us. So you guys have this excellent new show, Serie A Show. So tell the Calcioland listeners what they can expect if they tune into your podcast.
Well, I think it came about, the three of us have really enjoyed coming on Calcioland and having the guest spots. And, you know, your podcast is so well established, and it's so, you know, it's got such a great listener base and really good quality. But we sort of saw a little bit of a gap in terms of having a podcast that reviews the weekend's actions. And it was just a general sort of free-flowing chat between the three of us. That just had a little back and forth about what had happened at the weekend. So we've put it together mid-season, and it's been really well received so far. So we're just going to see where it takes us, really. We just dived in with that little gap, and you know, hope people can enjoy both things because they offer something a little bit different.
Absolutely, definitely. I've certainly enjoyed listening. I love having all you guys on the podcast, and I'm glad to hear more of you. So I want to close on this, Chloe. So you're a very prolific writer of articles. Like we mentioned at the top, you're on a lot of platforms. You now have your own podcast, and now you've started a new initiative that I'm really fascinated with. And I'll tell you, you know, very often people will ask me, you know, how do I get tickets to go to Serie A match? And I always tell them it's much harder than it should be. And you follow Fiorentina, which is based in one of the most, if not the most beautiful city in Italy. So you're working with a travel company to put together, you know, a tour of Florence that also includes tickets to a Fiorentina-Milan match. And this is pinned to your Twitter page. So if you want more details, or listeners, definitely check it out there. So tell me a little bit about this initiative, how you got involved. And what do you think people are going to get out of it?
Well, it's a combination of things, really. A friend of mine works for a major US travel agent, and we were just having a chat about Serie A in general and how people struggle to get tickets. Like you said, if you've never been to a tour before, it can be very, very daunting. People don't know what to do. And, you know, I have so many questions of people contacting me on my Twitter page to ask about tickets for Fiorentina, about where to stay, what to expect, and all those kinds of things that make people, you know, if you're a seasoned traveller, you take things for granted. But if you've not been before, it's a little bit more daunting. So, just chatting with my travel agent friend, we came up with the idea of just trialling a trip to Fiorentina Milan in May, where people would get the flight if they wanted to, accommodation, some tours of the area. We want to do a day trip to Siena and some tours of Florence so they get the most out of it. And then the most important part is the match day package, in which they, you know, I can organise them through my contacts at Fiorentina. I can organise their tickets so they don't have to worry about that, and show them the best places to enjoy pre-match atmosphere and all the build-up without the stress and without the worry. And it's, you know, everything's all included for them. So that was the idea. We're going to trial it and see what it's like. And then if it works, that there may be some more next season. But, you know, it was just a case of helping people out who seem to be, a lot of people seem to be stuck with it, really.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I'll tell you, it is a nightmare to go to a calcio match. I think our common friend Maurizio at Around Turin hit a home run with his idea there. I'd love to see basically every top Serie A team to have something equivalent. So I'm thrilled to see that you are trying this out to see how it goes. So I definitely recommend everyone check that initiative out. Check the Serie A show. Chloe, as you heard on this podcast, is fantastic, and you can hear her on regularly there. So, Chloe, I can't thank you enough for joining me on Calcioland. I hope to speak to you very soon.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, as always.
And after Fiorentina, we're going to transition into Juve. And who better to have to discuss the Bianconeri than our great friend Adam Digby, a regular on the podcast. So, we're recording this literally right after the match against Sassuolo. You guys know Adam as one of the elite Serie A writers in English. You can read him on 442 BR Football. He has a new excellent column on Flow Sports, which we'll get to towards the end of the podcast. And he is the author of the book Juventus, A History in Black and White. So, Adam, always a pleasure to chat with you. Welcome back to Calcioland.
Thanks, David.
Okay, so let's start a micro picture first. I want to get into the Champions League and some big storylines about Juve, but since I have you right after the Sassuolo match, let me ask you, what were some of your main takeaways from that match today?
I think it was really a continuation of what we've seen for the past few months, really. Juve, without Giorgio Chiellini, look really... at sixes and sevens in defence, to be honest, the cohesion is not there. The solidity that we're so used to with this Juve is sorely lacking. And then at the other end of the pitch, you've got players who can turn it on against teams who are in the bottom half of the Serie A table. But when it comes to the more difficult matches against more high tempo teams, they really struggle. I think we saw Sami Khedira, Emre Can. And even Paulo Dybala, to some extent, looking really sharp this afternoon, and that's not how they've been in matches against teams like Atalanta, where Juve are given a really hard time and a really tough test. So really, it's just an extension of the season in general, to be honest.
Very well said. And I'm glad you mentioned Chiellini. And you know, obviously, they've been without Bonucci too. But Bonucci has been, you know, I think it's safe to say, a defensive liability. So let me ask you about the center back position as a whole. To me, I see it as, you know, fairly considerably weakened with Benatia's departure, who, in my opinion, as a pure defender, was the second best on Juve after Chiellini. So, you know, you're a very objective person overall, but you do have strong passion for Juve. So with that in mind, how concerned are you about Juve's defense, especially after Benatia left?
I think it depends entirely on what version of Bonucci we're getting. If Bonucci kind of sees Benatia's departure and sees the shambolic nature of the team while him and Giorgio Chiellini have been absent, and he steps up and we see the old Leonardo Bonucci, the pre-Milan Leonardo Bonucci, when as Euro 2016 came to an end, we were talking about him as the best defender in the world. If we can get that version of Bonucci again, then yeah, I'm not concerned at all. But otherwise, if we get what we've seen of him so far, it really is worrying as Juve go deeper in the Champions League and into the difficult part of the Serie A season, because he's been just as error prone as Daniele Rugani, really. He's got a better reputation, he's got more experience, but he's been just just at fault for as many goals as Rugani has. He's been just as lacking in confidence and just as troubled as Rugani has. And I'm the first person to criticise Rugani when he does it, so you have to be willing to do the same for Bonucci. And I think On top of that, you have to look to Max Allegri as well. And I think that over the first 3 or 4 months of the season, the one area of the team where he was guilty of not rotating enough was in central defence. And I think some of that was down to trying to play Bonucci through these early struggles and try and keep him partnered with Chiellini until he rediscovered his best form. But ultimately, that's cost Juve Mehdi Benatia, who, for all he wants to talk about, he wants to go and raise his children in a Muslim environment in Qatar, which is entirely his right, obviously. But I think if he was playing sort of 50% or 40% of the matches in the early part of the season, that would be a conversation he'd be having with Juve in the summer rather than in January, when there's still every chance that he could be playing for a Champions League winner's medal come the end of the season if he was still around. And I think Juve's hopes of that have seriously been weakened by his departure, because I totally agree with you. He's the second best defender that Juve have had this season after Chiellini, and he was excellent last year throughout. I think he was better than Bonucci last year, hands down for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we completely agree here. And today, I know you posted, I think it was yesterday, an article on Bonucci, on Rugani, on Flow FC. And, you know, saying that, you know, this really is, he's never had a better chance now to establish himself at Juve. Benatia leaves right after it happens. Both Chiellini and Bonucci get hurt. Today, Juve had a clean sheet, but definitely not because of his performance. And I think, you know, in a lot of ways, he gets a pass because he was so hyped when he got started. In my opinion, he had plenty of chances to establish himself at Juve. So let me ask you, have you seen enough to think he has a chance to be a long-term starter at Juve for years to come once the BBC is completely phased out?
No, I haven't, to be honest. I think when he first came to Juve, probably for the first 18 months or so, I think he played 11. He got 11 Serie A starts in his first season, and he was progressing nicely for me in those early season and a half, maybe even 2 seasons. I would have said he was a better prospect than the likes of Alessio Romagnoli at that time, and Caldara as well. And I think that in the 2 years since then, I think he's plateaued, to be completely honest. I don't see any improvement in Lugani from probably 2016, 2017, perhaps. I think he's just stuck. He's not learned the lessons that are clearly there to be learned from playing with Barzagli, Bonucci, Chiellini. And you can bemoan the fact that he's been behind those three, that he's not received the playing time. But when a player who Max Allegri is seeing every day in training is falling behind, not just those three, but at various times, Cáceres, Benatia, even Angelo Ogbonna in his first season, there's a reason for that. And for me, the reason is that he's too timid, he's too nervous, and he panics. You can see it when a player runs at him. He looks like he's waiting to make a mistake and then have to recover from that mistake rather than trying to be decisive. I really have, over the last 18 months, just seen a complete lack of desire to improve, a complete lack of mental fortitude, I guess is the best way to describe it, that he doesn't have the mentality that we associate with Juve, and particularly with Juve defenders. And he isn't up to the task for me. I think you watch that every day and you see it. And yes, he's unfortunate that in his last few games, his chances come with Keeling and Bonucci injured. Perhaps if it was just one of them and he was playing with the other. But then you look at like the big mistake in the first time the ball came to him today. All he has to do is control that ball, make a simple pass. That's nothing to do with the fact that it's Cáceres. He could have been playing next to Gaetano Scirea, and he's still shying away from the ball and letting the Sassuolo striker cut in and then press forward to Szczesny. That's entirely an individual error. That doesn't come from a lack of playing time or the name of his partner alongside him. That's purely down to he shied away from a tackle, and we've seen that time after time after time, example after example of the ball is there to be blocked or to be won or to be cleared, and he flinches. And for me, a defender, you can't flinch. Yes, not everybody is Giorgio Chiellini. Not everybody is going to put their face in the way and block it with their nose and then need a bandage. But you can stick your foot in, you can take a whack, you can take it in the stomach, in your leg, wherever. But he doesn't want that contact, and that as a defender is unforgivable. Even the prettiest defenders, the likes of Alessandro Nesta, Paolo Maldini, when you have to throw your body on the line, then you do it, and that's first and foremost what makes you a defender. And he just doesn't have it.
So after Rugani, let's talk about another player who's been in the headlines, maybe not for the best reasons. This is Paolo Dybala, who's been fantastic, then not so much in Serie A. So how do you assess his season so far? And would you say that Juve has a Dybala problem right now?
I think probably to turn that on its head, I think Dybala has a Juventus problem. I've tweeted about it this afternoon while the game's been going on. It's not a criticism of anybody at all. It really isn't. I think Dybala is a wonderfully talented player who has a great future ahead of him. But for right now, I don't think he fits with Juve. I don't think that's down to Allegri or him or Ronaldo. It just doesn't work. I think to bring the best from the team as it's currently constructed or as it's ever going to be constructed with Ronaldo, you need to play 4-3-3 and you need a player who can play as a striker or go out to the wing when Ronaldo wants to play through the middle, which is Mandzukic. And then that only leaves the role on the right wing. And I think Federico Bernardeschi and Douglas Costa are both better suited to that than Paulo Dybala. And his game doesn't lend itself to that at all. And I think we see him wandering into midfield and picking up the ball. And that's great. Like today against Sassuolo, he can come to the halfway line. He can get the ball, he can make some nice, pretty little passes and create an opening that leads to a goal for Emre Can. We saw him do the same against Kievo. But when it comes to the big teams, you see Juve break forward from midfield and you're looking for an outlet, and you have Mandzukic to the left, Ronaldo through the middle, and then a space to the right, and that becomes a problem then. I think the lack of tactical discipline and the lack of ability to be a winger, which is, again, not a criticism of Paulo Dybala. He's many things, but that's not one of them. It just hurts Juve as they are at the moment. And I think it's no surprise to me that they look much better when Bernardeschi plays there, despite the fact that I would say Dybala is a better and more talented player.
Yep, I think that's a very good answer and a fair assessment. So now let's talk a little bit about the Champions League. So Juve has a very decisive lead. Serie A, they got bounced in the Coppa Italia. So really, the Champions League is where there's some uncertainty left. So Juve did their part. They won their group stage of the Champions League, but they did get arguably the toughest potential draw with Atletico Madrid, also because of styles of play. So let me ask you first, what is the biggest reason for optimism when it comes to Juve when they face Atletico Madrid, not this week, but the next one?
I think the two biggest things would be, hopefully, first of all, that Giorgio Chiellini will be fit and available for selection again, which definitely seems to be the case. And second, that Juve have Ronaldo. I think Atletico Madrid, we all know, you know exactly what you're going to get with them. They play the same way they always have with Simeone. They're going to be pressing. They're going to be high octane. They're going to be like a souped-up version of the Atalanta that we saw in the Coppa Italia for Juve. And it's very predictable as to what the challenge will be for Juve. And I think the bonus is the fact that they have Ronaldo, because his record, I think, is 11 goals in 12 games against Atletico Madrid, where Juve's record against Diego Simeone's Atletico Madrid is two shutouts in two games. They failed to score both times they've played them so far. So you're certainly looking to Ronaldo. And I think that goes back to what I was saying about Dybala, where Juve are going to need the three players who play in attack in those matches to be working together as a unit and to be holding their positions and to be causing problems for Atletico's defence, because the chances in those two legs are going to be few and far between. And I think, just to go back to what I was saying before with Dybala, it's very telling for me that for all his goals that he's scored this season, only one of them has come with Ronaldo and Mandzukic on the field at the same time. And I think that really is indicative of the player that he is and the way that he doesn't fit into this team. And I think really as well, the only big goal you could consider that he scored is the Champions League goal against Manchester United, which it gave Juventus a win at Old Trafford, but
yep.
his other goals, just scrolling through, he scored in the loss against Young Boys, he scored against Cagliari, he scored a hat-trick against Young Boys, and he scored against Bologna, and that just shows how his style works perfect. Not his style as a player, don't get me wrong, it's not that he can't score against big opponents. We know we've seen that before with Barcelona, but I think in this current team, in the way it's set up, his best performances are always going to come against lesser opponents. And Atletico Madrid are not that. And the goal that he scored against Manchester United came with Mandzukic injured. So I think there is reason for optimism. I think we saw that today. But I think that it has to come with Dybala sidelined, unfortunately.
Yep. So aside from Chiellini and Bonucci's health, which absolutely is paramount, are there any other reasons why Juve fans should be concerned? You mentioned the track record against Simeone isn't great. Anything else that stands out to you that worries you about this matchup?
I suppose you need Allegri to find a balance between Cancelo and Alexandro. I think that's kind of the same thing as Dybala playing in attack. I think perhaps against such a dangerous team like Atletico Madrid, maybe playing both of them is not the answer, and you might need to work Matías de Ciglio into the team. I think he's been excellent whenever he's been called upon this season, and I think his defensive solidity could prove important, certainly in the second leg. But I think that's quite a minor thing. I think the only other major concern that I would have is that Allegri doesn't play Sami Khedira. I think we've seen all too often that that's kind of a comfort blanket or a crutch that Allegri likes to lean on. And I think that, as we saw again today, when he went off and Chan came on, there was a lot more cohesion and movement and fluidity to the midfield with Chan. And I don't think Emre Can is a fantastic player, but I think that the blend of some combination of, I suppose what you're saying is Miralem Pjanic has to start. I think you probably have to say that Matuidi has to start, and then either Chan or Bentancur. And I think with a combination of that trio, I think then you can start to look forward to a promising game. I think if you put in Sami Khedira in there, I think you're opening yourself up to problems that you don't need.
Yeah, but as both you and me know, it's almost certain that Khedira will start. But let me ask you about
it. And then he'll probably score just to make me look stupid.
So speaking of Emre Can, so we're recording this right after Sassuolo match. He came in, scored a brilliant goal, great run of play for Juve. So let me ask you, because I'm going to tie it into Ramsey in a second, too. What do you make of Emre Can's tenure at Juve so far? Do you see him as someone that maybe next season can be a starter for Juve? So give me your assessment on him now and how you think he fits in down the road.
I think he struggled a little bit, to be honest. I think he's looked a little bit lost at times. I think some of that is certainly due to the, as I said before, the lack of cohesion in midfield. And when I say that, what I really mean is that Juve need a third midfielder, the kind of Milinkovic-Savic, Paul Pogba type player who can drive the game forward. And I think that kind of player with Pjanic and then either Chan or Matuidi would probably bring a much better performance out of Emre Can. I think that's, for me, long-term, that's his role, kind of him or Matuidi as the more defensive-minded of the two players flanking Miralem Pjanic. I think that's kind of the ideal modern setup, and that's the role he's suited for. I think when he plays with Pjanic and Bentancur, I think he's looked much better because he can be that player. He can be the most limited player of the three. And I think that's probably where he struggled the most is, Juve fans are expecting somebody to come in and light this midfield up, and that's not, he's not that guy, just the same as Blaise Matuidi is not that guy. And I think until Juve have the right third wheel for that unit, then I think everybody is going to struggle.
Yep. Yeah, and I want to talk to you about another Bosman signing, kind of Emre Can. You know him definitely better than I know. You've written an article on Aaron Ramsey, who's going to come next season. So tell me a little bit how you see him fitting in and what you think he'll bring to Juve.
I think he is exactly the kind of makeup of player that Juve need to complete their midfield. I think that more attacking player, the player who breaks forward and get into the opposition box and do, I suppose what we're looking for is looking for a player who can do what Sami Khedira does against Chievo and Sassuolo, to do it against Atletico Madrid and Barcelona. My question is, I don't think that Aaron Ramsey is good enough to do that consistently in the latter stages of the Champions League every match. I think he would be a good sub for that player, like Chan could sub for Matuidi, like Bentancur can sub for Pjanic. I think Juve will still need to make that big money investment to complete that midfield. And I think having a guy like Aaron Ramsey to come in and spell that guy in some of the easier matches and even some of the more difficult matches if he's not asked to do it every week. I think he has all the right ingredients, but I just think he's a little bit below the level of quality that you need if you're gonna win the Champions League rather than just go deep in the latter stages and get to the final. And I think while Juve are paying Cristiano Ronaldo so much money, they're looking to win the Champions League, not to, as much as Max Allegri and Fabio Paratici might deny it, they're not looking for a place in the quarterfinals and semifinals or even a game in the final. They're looking to win the competition. And I don't think Aaron Ramsey is of the talent level needed to take that next step.
Yeah, I'm with you completely, because in my opinion, you know, just because it's a good move doesn't mean that it's the right move. Yeah, these Bosman signings don't come with a transfer fee, but they are still expensive. You can only have so many midfielders who earn top money. And I keep thinking of something Marotta used to always say all the time. It's just very hard to find players that move the needle for Juve. Paratici has been saying it too. And unfortunately, it really has to be, obviously, you don't have to be as good as Ronaldo, but you need a player that's good enough to start for the top team. So I definitely appreciated your perspective there. So speaking of your perspective, you are a very prolific writer on Serie A. You've been for years. I've really enjoyed your new column on Flow FC, where you write about 10 different things that stand out to you in Serie A. So tell our listeners a little bit how you've enjoyed that gig and what they can expect when they read these columns.
Yeah, I really do enjoy it. I think I like being able to tell more detailed stories that you're used to in articles that I write. But I think the 10 things column, which is sort of born out of Zach Lowe does the same column for the NBA or for ESPN. What's the guy called? The NFL writer for Robert Mays for The Ringer.
Yeah.
A starting 11 column about the NFL. And it's a very similar thing, to be honest. I mean, we all love Serie A. We all watch our team every week. But a lot of people, that's all they do watch is their own team. And I think there are a lot of, what makes Serie A so great is there are a lot of stories that you miss if you only sit down to watch AC Milan, you only read the news about Inter, or you only turn up to watch Roma get beat 7-1 by Fiorentina, then maybe you miss a few of these stories. And some of it is the more fun things, like Cagliari missing their flight to Milan yesterday because dairy farmers barricaded them into their training ground in protest about milk prices on Sardinia. And some of it is the latest piece of skill from a guy like Nicolo Zaniolo that you might miss if you're not watching Roma every week, which not everybody does. As I say, if you're an Inter fan, maybe you don't care what Roma are up to, but it's nice to see those things. And being able to shine a light on either the off the beaten track stories or the nice little touches from players impersonally or just a goal that I really appreciate. I think it's great to be able to share that because it's things that I see every week and it really does add some colour to Serie A, I think.
Absolutely. So Adam, you're brilliant. You write a bunch of stuff. Anything else that you are working on that you want to tell our listeners to, or one of your favorite recent articles that you've read that stands out to you?
The 10 things, as I say, I've been doing that every week for the past month or so, and the latest one is pinned on my Twitter, so you can find it there. I wrote about at length about Rugani this week, about his chance to shine, and found a few interesting statistics to back that up, so that's well worth a look. And I think I would say that Flow Sports, Flow FC, is a really good place to start looking for Serie A content. They really are interested in the deeper stories, and there's not very much transfer gossip there. So if you like to read about what's actually going on in Serie A and find out a little bit more about players who maybe you haven't seen so much, or even the ones that you have, it's a really good avenue for that, for me as a writer and for readers as well, I hope.
Absolutely, yeah. They really couldn't have found a better person than you for those types of stories. So thank you so much, Adam, for joining us. You always do a superb job on Juve. Next time I bring you on, I think I'm going to bring you on to discuss anything but Juve, because I want people to get your great perspectives on everything else. But in the meantime, I want to thank you so much for joining me today on Calcio Land.
No problem. Thank you. And good luck with the podcast. Keep going in the future. It's great. And it really does bring some, as I say, like with Flow FC, you bring a different perspective and a lot of colour to Syria, as I just watch AC Milan score their second goal against Cagliari.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Adam. I'll talk to you soon and enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
You too. Talk to you soon.